for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 406 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I get to share interviews that took place during Dragon Con this year. Even though that's a little while back, I have edited them for timeliness, so they should be easy to listen to. First up is Dan Doherty, the creator of such things as Touching Evil, Beardo, and Floppy Cop. Next is Joe Pruitt from Aftershock Comics talking about what they're up to these days. After that comes Manuel Godoy from Black Sands Entertainment, who updates us on what that company is doing, including some fantastic comics that I have read and highly endorse. Then everything concludes with Michael Stark, the creator behind Wolverton Thief of Impossible Objects. He's got some insight into the comic and how we can access it. There's been 2 issues so far, and the 3rd one is on the way. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what all of them have to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. Check in at the multiverse that is Dan Doherty, who does Beardo and Touching Evil and Floppy Cop. How's it going, Dan?
Really good. How are you, Wayne?
Good. We're doing this, of course, at Dragon Con. And why don't you talk about Floppy Cop, because you got developments with that.
Yeah, Floppy Cop has been a very bizarre hit at Source Point Press, because it's a very weird book. Seth the Moose and I co-created it, and it's just in the spirit of like Adult Swim and Archer kind of fun, where he's a cop who's bending over backwards for justice, literally, because he has no vertebrae in his back. So he fights crime, he fights some very absurd criminals, has a really colorful cast of supporting characters, and the reception to it has been nothing but great. I mean, it's something that got debuted, it was back in Motor City like last year, and now we're actually through the first 5 issues of the story, which is like story arc number 1, and have a trade in October.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, where'd the idea come from? I mean, I get the joke about bending over backwards and stuff, but how did you guys come up with it?
Well, I mean, it really is dumb. If I can be honest with you, I'll backtrack a little bit, backtrack, pun intended, and say that Seth and I both had been coming off of really heavy, serious comics, and we were at a convention talking and saying like how much we wanted to do something fun and that would make us laugh. So in the spirit of that, we made rules kind of for ourselves that like we would just, you know, follow whatever actually made us laugh. You know, like that was really the impetus for it. And really kind of improvising and yes-anding the whole thing was kind of the trick to it. But it really stemmed from the idea of the word floppy copies. You know, comics are floppy copies. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I they're such a pain in the ass to sell at shows, like, to be honest with you. I love selling collections and trades and hardcovers, right? So I'm like, the only way I want to sell floppy copy is if it's like, I can say it's a floppy copy of Floppy Cop. And kind of started from there. I'm telling you, it was as ridiculous as that. And we're like, okay, what if you had like this character, that, you know, with them and that character, and like just riffing off each other and having a good time. And pretty soon it became a surprisingly cohesive story. Like it, from the most absurd beginnings, actually became something that has a plot line and has actual good character moments and really, I'm really attached to these bizarre creations now that we've made, and we're working on the next 5 issues of it right now. So it's fun to have them established now and then play with what they are, you know.
So what's the story about the first 5 issues?
Yeah, so he's the first story arc. He's he comes across a new villain in town named Crossword, who is threatening to blow up Christmas if the police of White Trickle Falls don't solve his crosswords. So he sends a crossword for every explosion, and they have to solve it in time, or else, boom, something else explodes in town. And for Floppy Cop, it's just another day on the job, but for there's a new rookie on the force, Carmen Crimson, and she's experiencing not only this new villain for the first time, but also being a cop for the first time, and this bizarre Floppy Cop guy. Like, he's the only guy like him. He's flopping around. He's a walking visual gag, and she doesn't know what to make of him because he bends the rules. He's not a rigid thinker. We really play with the puns of what Floppy Cop is, and she's very by the book. So they're a very odd, unlikely couple that end up having to work together to solve this thing.
Now, are you self-publishing this, or is this being printed through somebody else?
No, it's being printed through Sourcepoint Press. What was really cool about our debut with it was that it was self-published at first, like for one issue. When we did the first issue at Motor City, it blew up at that show. Now, part of that was because we had the whole team there. We had Jay Fosgate, the cover artist. We had Milena Deneno, the colorist, and Seth and I. So we, all 4 of us were there in full force, Team Floppy Cop. And we sold through, like, hundreds of copies of that thing at that show. I'm not even kidding. Like, it was the best reaction I could have hoped for. And Sourcepoint was also at that show, and I know Travis and I know some of the guys there, and they took a look at it and they were like, I don't know what the hell this is, but I want to publish it. So it was like, it was this kind of strange marriage that happened early on, and we've really been fortunate to have them as our home because, you know, they tour the country really hard. I don't think any publisher hits the convention circuit harder than Sourcepoint Press. So our little book kind of stands out on the table because it's usually a pretty strong horror, sci-fi, thriller kind of vibe. And so all of a sudden there's this one weird standout book that people go, what's that? And you go, oh, you're going to have to read that one because it's better to read it than to even explain it.
So when's the trade out?
Trade's out in October. I will have it at New York Comic Con, and then I believe it comes out just in time for Halloween. Yeah.
The holidays, too. You can totally buy it.
Especially with the Christmas theme. Yeah. I mean, there's a really fun, strong Christmas theme throughout the story arc, because, again, they're trying to stop Christmas from being blown up. But it, you know, it's just a fun book for anyone who really enjoys, like I said, Adult Swim, Archer. I'd even go so far as to say, like, Monty Python. Like, it's got some cleverness to it, I think, but it's also not afraid to go and take bizarre turns just for the sake of a laugh, you know.
Yeah. Now, I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but didn't Sourcepoint Press also get Touching Evil? They're pretty
good. Yeah.
Talk about that.
I sure will. I'm really excited about that. Sourcepoint, we actually were talking about that, I think, even before Floppy Cop, because I do feel like, you know, in the spirit of what they do, which is a lot of horror stuff, as well as, like I said, sci-fi and everything else, like, Touching Evil would fit right in. And with the series being 14 issues done at this point, I really wanted to figure out my next step for it, because I do want it to continue through at least another story arc, which would bring it up to 21. But I realized that I'm only one person. I can only do so much, right? So, like, my reach has been great for what I can do, but I really want their arm to extend it further. And so, to the rest of the public at large, they're going to be seeing this whole series for the first time, and seeing it on a monthly basis. So that's kind of, to me, impressive as far as a creator-owned book that's being published by, I'd say, you know, like a moderately sized publisher, and they're going to be able to count on it being monthly because 14 issues are already done. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we solicit. Touching Evil is actually in Diamond Preview's catalog under Source Point Press. Mm-hmm. And we're making a big push to get people to order that book because, you know, we really want this thing to go the distance. And, yeah, it'll be September solicit, and I believe it's a December release or November. So it's a November release, monthly from then on in. We'll have soft cover collections of the story arcs, which are 7 issues long. And I even got a special cover artist for those collections, Aaron Miller, who works with Magic the Gathering. He's done some amazing work, and I've already seen one of the covers, and I'm about to see the other ones. That's pretty exciting. And I've also done a brand new cover for each issue so that it's got something special to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why don't you describe what the story is to people that may not have seen it before?
Yeah. It's a really, really messed up premise. This woman is given a curse. She can kill anyone she touches, but only if they're evil. And anyone she kills lives inside of her mind in the afterlife. Like, their spirit just sits in, like, a limbo in her head, talking and kind of slowly driving her nuts the more bodies she could potentially pile up. And she doesn't have a choice as to what the definition of evil is. She only has a choice of whether or not to use it. And as somebody who's a normal person, at first she's like, I don't want this at all. Like, this is something that I never asked for. It's just given to her. But as the story progresses and as people find out that she has it and they want to take it from her, she's forced into positions, like situations where she's got to decide, do I use this thing? Will it work? What if it's somebody that I care about? And it leads to some really suspenseful and really intense storytelling. Like, it's basically every issue, once you get the premise locked in, every issue ends on like a holy crap moment. Like, and then it really just keeps building up to a crescendo, to the point where she's definitely not the same person she was when she started in the series. So yeah, I'm excited because, again, there's 14 issues of this thing and people are gonna go on a pretty cool ride.
There are some really creepy parts to this. You and I have talked about it. I don't want to spoil it now that the story's going to build.
Yeah.
But there's a particularly creepy part that has to do with a body part, shall we say.
Yeah.
More than that, I'm not going to say. But let's just say that creeped me out when I saw that. And of course, then I have to have more. So that's my favorite of your stuff that you do.
Thanks.
But the other stuff's great stuff, but this is the one that really grabs me. It scares me like almost nothing else does. So it's really great stuff. So
thanks.
It's just great stuff. Now, let's talk about Beardo. Why don't you describe what Beardo is to people?
Sure, yeah. Beardo is a slice of life comic strip that I did for 10 years. And I recently, like a couple years ago, I finally ended the strip, but my ending was an unexpected viral sensation. It kind of went above and beyond any of my wildest expectations of what I wanted as far as a reaction, you know, like, or a send-off. Because it's a very, you know, everyday kind of comic strip. It's about a guy trying to make it as an artist while being an adult, which is, you know, funny to me. Like, I try to basically poke fun at myself the whole time. And along the way, like, the characters all grow and age, kind of like, you know, certain comics have done that, but not a whole lot. And really follows, I mean, if you look at the whole scope of it, like, it does follow like a pretty significant chunk of adulthood that I think a lot of people can relate to. That, you know, that early stage when you just don't know what the heck you're doing, mm-hmm. all the way through to figuring out, you know, like, where your foothold is in this world, if you ever do, mm-hmm. and relationship woes, good and bad stuff with relationships, and even marriage and parenthood. So, like, it really covers a lot of bases. And I always had a strong following before the ending, but when the ending hit, all of a sudden I had a huge spike in new readers. So what I've been doing is rerunning the whole series from the start. After it ended, I took a little bit of time just to kind of collect myself after how crazy it was, to be honest with you. And then I was like, you know what, there's a lot of people who want to read this and then never have. And I've always made it available to read online in the hopes of that my readers would, you know, enjoy it and then, you know, grab a book or whatever. There's 5 books in the whole series. I'm running it, and I'm actually already at the end of book 2. So it's been fun seeing new reactions to stuff that I did a while ago and going like, oh, it still resonates. That's good, you know?
The one thing you did that surprised me was crossing over Beardo with Touching Evil.
Touching Evil, yeah.
I mean, 2 completely different universes suddenly met, and I thought, he's never going to be able to make that happen. But you did, and I really enjoyed it, too. Is that going to be available? How can people access that?
You know, that's cool that you said that. I really enjoyed doing that. And it initially, it was done as part of the first Touching Evil Kickstarter. It was a bonus for a stretch goal that we hit. We hit a couple stretch goals on that one. So I did that one, and I wanted to do a second one in the second Kickstarter. And although the second Kickstarter actually pulled in more money, I didn't hit that stretch goal because I put it like at the top. So I was like, ah, man, I really wanted to. I had a follow-up. So I want to do it eventually. Like, I think I might eventually follow it up and then put a special comic together that would be different from what the Kickstarter backers got, because they got an exclusive one that only for the backers, right? So that's why you got it. I'll do a different one that collects that plus maybe another story or two of the Touching Beardo story and see where it goes. But yeah, I had a blast doing that, and it was like an improbable pairing, but it did... it did make me laugh, and it seems like it made other people laugh, too. Yeah.
It was so funny because I had supported your project, and I had forgotten I had done it. I moved, and it probably didn't follow me. So then when we talked about it, I was looking through the book, and I looked through the and there was my name in there. So I was really surprised, but I'm glad I did it because I really enjoyed the book. Just a fantastic book. All of them are great. You know, you always put everything into it. Any other projects that are... Is this going to keep you busy for now?
There are other things in the works that I have. I can't talk about them, of course. It's one of those sort of things. I am very focused on my creator-owned stuff, though. So I do feel like it does take up a good chunk of my time, which is a good thing at this point. You know, after so many years of doing it, that I can still do it. So I want to do a follow-up to Touching Evil, obviously, like a third volume worth, because Source Point's going to be hopefully running past 14. Seth and I are working on Floppy Cop, you know, Volume 2, Issue 6 through 10. And I might have another creator-owned thing coming out, but I'm not going to talk about it just yet.
Yeah. You going to Kickstarter it?
Yeah, I want to kickstart the third volume of Touching Evil, for sure.
Oh, but is that this new project, too? Are you talking about Kickstarter?
It would be a different model. It would be something that could... Like, I actually am considering doing a Patreon for it, because I feel like it would be a better fit given the nature of what it is. And I won't say yet, because I want to confirm that I'm going to do it, but it would be sort of like a thing where people could subscribe to my comic and read it pretty regularly.
If people want to follow you online and at social media, how do they do that?
Well, I'm on Instagram and Facebook a lot, so I would say at Beardo Comics on Instagram, or even Twitter, it's the same thing, at Beardo Comics. On Facebook, you can follow the Beardo page, which I believe is just Beardo Comic, I think, because I couldn't get the other one. But look up Beardo, you'll find it. I've got like 14,000 people on there, so it usually pops up at one of the top part of the list. And you can even follow me personally on Facebook, Dan Doherty. I do post a lot of my Beardo strips and my art on there as well. So I'm pretty easy to find. Like, all my social media is pretty open. And yeah, I definitely am a regular poster. So if you enjoy new content every day, that's, you know, not just, you know, pictures of my kids.
Real quick, what other cons are you going to do this year besides the one that we're at?
I think that's it for me for the year. This is kind of the back end of my con season. Yeah.
Well, you're busy as always, and every time you're in a musical group too, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I'm releasing a solo album. I have a band, but it's under my name, so I'm releasing a solo album really soon. It's already done recording, we're just waiting for the masters, so that's what I'm really looking forward to right now, because I've been sitting on it all year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, I'm anxious to hear that too.
Thanks.
It'll be funny stuff. So you do wonderful stuff, to keep it up. It's just, I can't wait to see what you're going to do next.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, thanks for the interview.
right, I'm talking with Joe Pruitt from Aftershock Comics. And you're still the publisher there, Joe?
Yeah, I'm the publisher slash chief creative officer.
Okay. And last time I talked with somebody from Aftershock, it was Steve Rotterdam back in January.
Right.
Can you give us an update as to what Aftershock's been up to since then?
Well, we try to continue to still publish the same great stuff we've been doing. We're doing about 10, single issues a month and about, three trades and, throw in a couple of hardcover collections and every quarter we'll probably put up a hardcover original graphic novel. And that's what we're doing publishing-wise. Otherwise, we're also building up what we call the Aftershock Army to go out and do some face-to-face time with all the retailers around the country and just keep pushing our product and getting them familiar with it in certain relationships.
How successful has that been? Because I know that you guys are one of the forerunners in this kind of stuff. I mean, it's important for stores to feel contact with publishers and stuff. How's that going?
You build relationships. I think it's going great. About a year and a half ago, I personally went on a tour of doing comic shops. I did 80 stores in about 5 months, mm-hmm. 5-6 months, face-to-face time, and met with all the store owners. And we could look at data and find out that a lot of stores I visited increased sales of Aftershock product by as much as 40%. After I visit. I visit with the store and I also visit with their customers. And it's all about building relationships. If you have friends that you want to support your friends, right?
Right.
So if you got that relationship with them, they might want to go that extra mile to help you out too.
Okay. All right. Let's see. How does one become a member of this team?
Well, there is a application form. I'll be honest, at the top of my head, I don't know where it is. It's probably on our website, but it's got, we call the Aftershock Army. Steve Rotterdam and Ruth Ann Thompson are heading that up right now. So you can go to our website and look there, and there's probably a link for it. If not, you can probably email Ruth Ann or Steve directly, or even go to the Facebook page for the company and send a message, and we can hook you up that way.
Okay. Now, of course, we're recording this at Dragon Con. You guys do a lot of conventions. How's this convention going for you?
It's actually not too bad. I mean, this is my local town. I'm local here in Atlanta. I don't do Dragon Con very often. I used to find out that when you're local means we don't care about you as much. But I do a lot of conventions. And Aftershock as a company does a lot of conventions. I personally probably do about 10 to 12 a year. Heck, I even did Paris Comic Con 6-7 months ago over there. But yeah, we try to get out and see the people. I kind of think conventions are the only place you really actually get a chance to go face to face with your consumer, with your audience, So I think it's very important to do them.
Okay. Now, Paul Jenkins is here. Has he got any new books coming out from you guys?
Paul, his last book, his third book with us, Beyond Earth, just finished up not too long ago. At present, I don't think we have anything in the line with him. Doesn't mean it won't happen. No, Paul's one of my good friends here, too. We actually shared office space here for several years until recently. Paul's one of my favorite writers, and he's a good guy. Don't every time I said that, because I always insult him when I see him. As soon as his schedule frees up, I'll let him do some more work with us.
Okay. What other titles have you guys got coming out this year?
Let's see. Bad Reception by Juan Doe. Juan's been a mainstream artist for us since day one. He's artist for American Monster, artist for Dark Ark, very successful series for us, and he's continuing to do that. Bad Reception is his first book, at least for us. It might be his first book ever, but I don't know. For us, where he's actually the writer and the artist on it.
Hmm.
Midnight Vista is kind of loosely based on a true story of an alien abduction experience by the writer.
Mm-hmm.
Nice Temporal with Colin Bunn is another new title we have, which has done phenomenally well, went to second printing right away.
Mm-hmm.
Very happy about that book. Marguerite Bennett has an original graphic novel called Horde, a horror one coming out in October 23rd,
mm-hmm.
We were proofreading it last week before we sent the printers, and she basically let me know, saying, I believe this is the best story I've ever written.
Mm.
And I tend to agree with her. I love little horrors, kind of based on like Japanese legend.
Mm-hmm.
So that comes out, and I'm excited about that. And I know several other things in the works. I know some things have not been announced, so I can't talk about it.
Right.
Because we make sure it goes with the proper channels.
Right. Okay, this year for you guys has been the year of reading dangerously. Are you going to follow that up with like another year of reading dangerously, or a year of reading more dangerously? How are you going to follow this up?
Yeah, we'll probably, you know, come with another little tagline next year as well. Reading dangerously, that's what that means. I say it means you're reading as you drive, but don't do it. No, but I was just thinking, I think our titles are out of the norm. Mm-hmm. And so when you read our books, you're reading something, different, and dangerous. Mm-hmm. It's a cute little tagline. Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of your titles challenge, traditional thinking,
right,
which is what I like about them.
Thank you.
And I'm just curious, because once you start doing that, isn't this something you're going to have to continue for a while? I mean, you want to keep this kind of a thing going to get noticed and get people's attention.
Well, we always want to get people's attention, so we'll do whatever it takes. Like I said, if it means going to meet you face-to-face, or it means, get away, meet you in the conventions, or whatever it takes, we have no problems doing that. We want to do that, because we know it's a grassroots campaign. Comics, you don't just put a comic out and become a success. You have to work hard at it, and we're very willing to work hard.
Now, how's Animosity doing? That's one of my favorite titles you guys have done. I always say, when I first read the book, I was sitting there and I looked down at the two dogs that were at my feet sitting there, and I was thinking, what are they really thinking about after that? So how is that series doing?
That's right. It's our longest running series. It's a most successful series in the long term, and I say the trades for it are every week they do really well. Continue to sell real well, and we're finding more audiences for it every day. And it's being developed for feature film by Legendary Pictures, and that seems to be going pretty well going forward. So if that does happen, then I just imagine that Animosity would become an even bigger success than it already is.
Because, to me, this is the perfect time to do a show like that. Special effects and stuff have gotten to the level where you can do it believably. I mean, we use computers to change people's faces so that they're old or young now. Now we can probably do the same thing with animals and make them talk.
Most definitely. The CGI has just take leaps and bounds in the last few years. And I know Legendary has high hopes for the series and make it a series of feature films, a trilogy at least, I would imagine. So, it's great, because Marguerite Bennett, the writer, the creator, was one of the most lovely people in the business. So I love seeing success from people who deserve it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know where she's going to go with that book. That's one of the greatest things about the book, is unpredictability of that. But honestly, when Paul Jenkins always makes me come back to Replicas.
Oh, I love Replicas. It's one of our favorite series. At the time, it was one of our first books, and being a new company, I'm going to have our peaks and valleys. It's going to take a while to get noticed, and unfortunately, at the beginning, the book, it sold fine. It just didn't sell well enough to keep going past that, and plus some of the personal reasons why it didn't go. But it's a book I get asked about all the time, about doing more, and Paul would love to. I've already got two more scripts for him that just sit in there. And I was just talking to him about it actually earlier today or yesterday, about how we get more replica out here.
Because I love the covers were funny.
They're great.
The stories were interesting. Because the business of cloning is something, as time goes on, we're dealing with more and more. So I actually think that's going to be more relevant as time goes along. So I'd love to see more of it.
I do too. It's a great series, and it's one of Paul's best projects, best well-written books he's done. And he thinks that too. And he thinks everything he writes is well-written. So,
well, it's interesting, because humor is something that comics are not known for. And yet that book is funny in its time. I mean, you've got the different replicas all have different personalities. And they're hilarious when they interact with each other, So I always thought that when I read that would be a wonderful television show. You can talk about animosity. Yeah. I'd like to see Replicas.
I'm not saying Replica can't happen as a TV show. I'm not saying there haven't been interest in Replicas as a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that happens. That'd be great. Paul is actually a very good humor writer. A lot of people don't know that. Even me and Paul, most of our stuff is very, I would say, dark or serious. But if you meet us in person, especially if you get Paul and I together, we're anything but serious.
Mm-hmm.
So he's basically, he's writing his personality. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's good. I like to do it again.
Cool. Okay. So, if, to keep up with your stuff, we go. What's the best ways, like on social media, to keep up with your stuff? Facebook?
Yeah, no,
your website?
We have a Facebook, and it's an Aftershock Facebook page. We also have an Instagram page. Those are two best. And then also the website is updated regularly. Mm-hmm. So, any of those way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Now, I interviewed your brother. Once, a while back, and of course he works for Scout Comics, right? And we talked about the fact that you guys are identical twins, like I am an identical twin.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, my twin brother lives up in Maryland. I'm just curious as to when I talked with him, he started really, you know, talking, you know, had a lot of funny things to say about being a twin, and I thought I'd come at it from your angle.
What's I'm it a like? Twin.
He said you'd say that.
I'm definitely better looking, but.
Okay. But I mean, being a twin, I mean, you know, and working in the industry, I mean, you know, I heard somebody even just today say they didn't realize it was you. They thought it was Jim.
I've had that
they were talking
before, yeah.
Yeah. Because I've had that. There was one time when my brother took my place at a job and actually worked for a day.
That's great.
But we don't make a habit out of that. But I was just kind of curious. I mean, are there challenges with that, or does it help to do that?
Well, I think the biggest challenge is that make sure that Jim's not a jerk. Because I've had, Frank Thierry, who I've known for years, and Donnie Case were at a show, I think, in Florida last year. And I had no idea that did not know I had a twin brother in the industry. So they saw me, they thought it was me at the show, and I totally blew them off. And they go, man, Joe is such, you know, a beep, you know. So what's wrong with him? And then they realized that I had a twin brother, and then they're like both texting me and going, oh my God, I don't have a twin brother. We thought you were just being a total jerk. And that's happened before too, with like people thought I was really cold when it wasn't me. So I just make sure Jim, you know, is nice to everybody.
Now, you guys are both publishers, which I find interesting. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you get like a promotion to another thing, does he have to do that in Scout? Is that what has to happen?
No. Actually, we worked together at Caliber Comics. He was the managing editor, and then I was a creative director at one point. So actually, we worked together in the same company. And when we took the job, I said, okay, one condition, Jim could never be my boss. And so we were kind of like code number twos.
Okay.
So he wasn't my boss, and I wasn't his boss. The only way we could work together. Okay. We would never be able to do it if we were like... Mm-hmm. One over the other. Mm-hmm. But in my mind, I'm always over him.
Okay.
So.
Because it's always different when you're a twin. I mean, you people ask me, what's it like to be a twin? And I tell me.
So what's it like not to be one?
That's exactly what I say. I say, what's it like not to be one? I don't know the experience of not having a twin brother.
I dream about it all the time, though.
Oh, do you? Well, I've seen like there was a pair of actors that were twins. And one of them got killed in a car crash. And the other guy. He just basically didn't recover, you know. I never saw him act after that. So it's a different kind of life that people don't understand.
Yeah, it's very fascinating.
Yeah, it's just something different. So, well, anything else that we should know about your stuff? I mean, if we want to follow you, like, say, on social media as opposed to Aftershock.
Yeah, I'm on Facebook. Joe Pruitt was on Facebook. I don't do a lot of social media. I'm on Twitter, too. I don't use it like I should, but I am there. And that's about the only two places I believe I'm at.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, you know, I appreciate the work that Aftershock does. I think
appreciate
you guys are you've carved out a specific niche for you guys that I think is creativity is one of the things that I associate with Aftershock and telling good stories and stuff.
Well, that's what we plan on doing, yeah.
Yeah, well, keep it up. It's great stuff.
Appreciate it. Thanks for the interview.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
I'm talking now with Manuel Godoy from Black Sands Entertainment. How are you doing today, Manuel?
I'm doing fine.
It's good to talk with you. I have the hardcover, which I supported you guys in, and I also do a Patreon with you guys, too, because I like your stuff. I first ran across your comics, I think it was in New York Comic Con last year.
Correct.
You were around the curtain from where we were, and so I got a chance to look at it, which I really liked. So I saw that, and I really liked it. And one of the things that I really appreciate is diversity in comics, because your stories were really good, and it's something I haven't read before. You know, in my years of reading comics, I really appreciate something that's a different story and takes me someplace where I haven't been. So I learned something, and I really like that about the books. Do you want to talk a little bit about what is Black Sands about?
Okay, so Black Sands is based on ancient Egyptian mythology. The story takes place around 3500 BC because we wanted to have something where we had more liberties to go and tell a story that we wanted. And it's about Asar and his rise to power. He's the grandfather of the pharaoh, Ra, and he's trying to prove that he could be the next leader. But a war breaks out between seven kingdoms, and now it's up to him and his kin to save the world. That's a little bit of ancient alien vibes going on with the Sumerians and the Greeks, but it's definitely one of those stories that, you know, if you're a huge anime fan, you know, manga type thing, then you're gonna love like where this is going.
Now, is this, how historical is this? I mean, is this?
We actually have historical references in the hardcover. Okay. I know you've seen that.
Yeah.
And we do some research, a lot of research involved, and I try to basically tell a story as if I was an ancient person and now I knew everything I was talking about. Because like back in the day, a lot of exaggerations were made about some people that might have been actual people. Like we found out recently in the last 5 years that Gilgamesh was a real person. Mm. Not just some Sumerian, you know, fantasy story, but he was a real person. He probably didn't wrestle with gods, right? But he was a really respected king at the time because they found all the other tombs of the people in the stories. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, and then they talked about Ramses II. Mm-hmm. He was one who lived 1,000 years, right? Mm-hmm. He had a lot of like mythos written about him. Mm-hmm. And really he was like, he lived to like 90 something, which was absolutely insane back in the day. Mm-hmm. So like 5-6 generations of Egyptians lived and died under him. So they really thought the man was immortal, you know? Mm-hmm. So I just think that maybe some of these things were just straight up exaggerations of the real first pharaoh, you know?
Well, people look from their perspective, that was forever, like you're saying.
Exactly.
They couldn't believe somebody could live that long. I read an anime one time where this guy was running for president, and he went to some Texas restaurant, and he ate not one, but two whole steaks. And it was like, oh my gosh, nobody can ever eat two whole steaks. Well, if they had been in America, they would. There's some people who eat 2, 3, 4 steaks. So I got a kick out of that, but it's people's perspective. Mm-hmm. And it's great that you worked that into that to make that happen. Talk a little bit about the artwork too, because one of the things I really enjoy about it is the art.
Yes.
Who does the art for the series?
So originally it was just my artist, David Lenneman, aka Hydrus. He's been working with me for like 2.5 years, 3 years, you know. Mm-hmm. He's been with us for a very long time. And one thing I told him when we were creating our comics was, you know, I'm going to write the script and I'm just going to hand it off to you. I'm not going to do what typical comic writers do, where they tell you exactly which panels is what. And I say, if I'm the producer, you're the director. I'm not going to mess with your job, you know. Mm-hmm. And he makes some decisions sometimes with the script, gets some content out there. I approve it most of the time, right? Because it's more about telling the story and telling it quickly. Mm-hmm. You see how we do our art, so it's very expensive per page, right? So we try to cut as much down as possible and get the story going as fast as we can.
Which is great. I mean, as far as reading goes, it's a great read because it just pulls you from panel to panel. And I was just, you know, I didn't realize it was coming to the end already, and there it was at the end. So it just really flies. Now, talk a little bit about the hardcover, though. I mean, that was a, you know, you did that through Kickstarter, if I remember correctly. And, you know, it's interesting because not every comic gets turned into a hardcover.
Yes.
What was it about it that you felt that the hardcover treatment was good for this?
Well, educators bug me all the time. So this was really a decision made specifically for libraries and for more liberal use. Like, this is something that multiple kids will be checking out.
Right.
It has to survive longer. That's why you also see supplemental content in there about the actual historical stuff. Mm-hmm. It's for students, mm-hmm. you know? So one thing we've noticed is that educators are obsessed with our content, not just, you know, Black Sands, but Maury's Family Adventures, our new series Cosmic Girls, because of the, you know, the amount of actual like immersion for the students. You know, mm-hmm. they don't only see Black content, but Black significant content mm-hmm. for some form of legacy in which they can, you know, set a standard for themselves in the future.
It's really engaging stuff to read. I mean, the characters are interesting. You know, you've got this rivalry between two sons that takes place early in the books. And I talk a little bit about that. I mean, are those two sons, were they real people? Are these
okay.
part of the story? How does that work?
So Asar and Bess are mythological characters,
okay.
right?
Okay.
Asar is basically a prince at the time, right? Mm-hmm. Prince of Kemet, a.k.a. Egypt, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Bess is the prince of Kush, a.k.a. ancient Nubia,
okay.
right? Or Sudan, ancient mm-hmm. Sudan. And historically, Kush and Kemet have had huge rivalries between each other.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they're friends one day, sometimes mm-hmm. the enemy, mm-hmm. basically personified through their fathers, you know, Ra and Amenemhat, who literally have a huge rivalry going on,
mm-hmm.
right? But they're cousins at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So their rivalry is more based on, you know, who's the true prince, who's eventually going to be the true pharaoh of the entire Nile. You know, it's like symbolic,
mm-hmm.
which is why they compete so much, even though they're friends,
mm-hmm.
you know, and why they don't take it so personally if they lose. They don't hate each other for it, you know?
It's just talk about powers. I mean, the fact that they have powers, is, if you're a fan of superheroes, you can relate to that because these people have abilities that probably other people might not have.
Yeah, so Asar, he has the rare ability to basically manifest his soul outside of his body.
Mm-hmm.
It enforces his powers, you know, gets him a lot stronger,
mm-hmm.
But he doesn't have much control over it yet. So most he could do is like maybe control his power over his fist, right, to reinforce his punch as well.
Mm-hmm.
It also increases his regular stamina in general, so he's way more stamina than most of the other characters in the series. His brother Seth, because of all the abuse he's had over his life, he's learned to basically manifest those ideas that people thought of him because of his skin condition
mm-hmm.
onto others. So
mm-hmm.
so he can like make you believe that you're diseased or dying,
mm-hmm.
right? And this can cause chaos on a battlefield, right?
Mm-hmm.
He also has the power over sand, which is historically accurate to his mythos,
mm-hmm.
right? He's
mm-hmm.
the god of the desert.
Mm-hmm.
And Isis, a.k.a. Aset, she has powers over all elements.
Mm-hmm.
She has power over magic in general.
Mm-hmm.
Magic's actually extremely rare in the Black Sands universe.
Mm-hmm.
So the people who can control it
mm-hmm.
tend to be way overpowered.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she's a little girl, so mm-hmm. she has horrible time controlling this power,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like anybody could really check her on it at
mm-hmm.
the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a wild card in our story.
Mm-hmm.
And then Nebet has the ability to use her soul, right? But it's in different ways. She can't use it to enforce herself, but she can project images. So she can send a spirit like all the way over there and do something with it, or she can make herself look like other people. It's very like more of a trickster type way of using it.
Okay. It's really interesting because the story is really engaging. While there's powers involved, it's still also very human.
Yeah.
These characters live and breathe. I mean, when I was reading the book, you know, it's one of those books that you fall into and you get lost in. So when I got to the end of it, I was like, where's more? And my understanding is you've got issue 5.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so we got issue 4. Did you read issue 4 yet?
Is that part of the hardcover?
No.
Okay, I haven't read issue 4.
Okay,
I've read the hardcover.
Yeah, so issue 4, they're leaving Kemet at the time, and they're finally going on their quest
mm-hmm.
to Minoa, because Minoans got attacked in issue 3,
mm-hmm.
right? And when they get there, I mean, before they go, they meet up with this guy who's going to smuggle them out of Quebec, right? Mm-hmm. They can't exactly go. It's not an official trip.
Right.
But in order to get there, mm-hmm. issue five, they have to do a favor for the smuggler. And that's to basically help him get this ancient relic mm-hmm. from what we call the Shadow Gale. Mm-hmm. And this is the first time mm-hmm. you see the heroes actually going against ancients. And it's a disaster. Mm-hmm. It's one of the times where you can see a lot of people die. It's the first time you really see like authentic violence of the ancients and see the real terror of what they're truly up against. These are just subspecies compared to the actual gods, mm-hmm. and they have so much trouble dealing with that alone. So,
wow. Okay. Do you have any idea how many issues you're going to do in this story?
The first season is 13 issues.
13 issues. Okay.
And after that, we'll continue. We might expand. We have multiple different issues going out as well. The first Sparrow is almost done, which is a manga, mm-hmm. a black and white manga of Ra's story.
Okay.
Right? And then we have another one called Asar, Rise of the God Killers. Mm-hmm. And that one is going to be a manga as well. That's going to be full color. And that's his backstory on the time when he trained with his grandfather. Mm-hmm. So we have side stories going on while the main story is going, just because it takes so much time to do art that way, mm-hmm. that there's plenty of time to just get other artists to go and knock out more stories that people want.
Mm-hmm. That's all really fascinating stuff. And I, like I said, even talking with you, I'm learning stuff that I didn't know, which is really great. And I love that in a book. I mean, I love adventure as much as anybody, but I also like to come out knowing a little more about stuff. So your book does that really well, and I really just enjoyed that so much. As far as like people getting the book,
yes.
How do they do that?
They can order it at blacksandsentertainment.com. Mm-hmm. They also can get it from Amazon, right? Mm-hmm. They just look up Black Sands. I usually post them the second I actually have the physical copies. Mm-hmm. So there's no pre-orders on Black Sands on Amazon, but they can do that on our website as well. Okay. We also sometimes do variant cover runs. Mm-hmm. Right when a book comes out, we'll do it for like maybe a week or two. We'll mm-hmm. put it up there so people can pre-order that, and then we order those specifically okay. so people can have those classics.
Is it available like on Comixology or any kind of digital format?
Not yet, but I believe that it's going to be released on Lezen very soon. Lezen
okay.
Comics.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that one.
Yeah, that's more of a mobile comic website, okay. so it's more mobile friendly.
Oh, you know, now I kind of remember looking into that.
Yeah, it's like Webtoons and yeah. Lezen are the two big ones.
That's right.
In the
that's
U.S.
Right. You're right. That's good. That'd be interesting. It'd be nice to have that out there where people can access it. And stuff.
Yeah, and we're also developing an app as well for Black comics in general that wow. we're going to be the pioneers of.
You know, that'd just, be.
Because we got demand, so.
That would be really good. Because again, these things I don't know about. Like there's another book called Yi Sun Chin that I really love because it's in a part of the world over in the Far East that I just don't know anything about. And I learned so much about the history of the people, you know, and it gives you a little bit of insight into how people today.
Yeah, cultures are fun.
Yeah, because it's just great stuff. And that's what about yours I really loved about that too, was the fact that I begin to understand all these good things and begin to know. I tell you something, I really appreciate that. I sometimes in America we get focused on ourselves and we don't learn about other people and how they do things. To have your book and to have, you know, it's a perfect example, I think, of how we can get to understand each other better. And I really like that about it, as well as having, you know, very entertaining story going on
yeah.
at the same time. You know, it's not dry. I don't want to give the impression that it's dry at all. It's a very fascinating.
Yeah,
comic.
we put education aspects secondary to actually having an awesome Shonen Jump, you know, story. You
yeah,
know?
It's really good. Have you thought about animation? Taking that?
We are working on that right now, and we also have recently partnered with an animation director that's done many Pixar and Disney movies and stuff
really?
Like that. So we're planning on going a lot harder on that, you know.
Yeah. Well, we're seeing you here at the convention. How many conventions do you guys go to? Like I said, I saw you at New York.
Like close to 20.
Each year?
A year, yeah.
Wow. Any others this year?
We're also going to be at Anime NYC and Johannesburg, South Africa.
So really?
Yes, there too.
Wow. So you guys get around, I'll tell you. Man, you do stuff. Well, it's a great book. I'm really glad you're working hard to promote it and stuff like that. I hope more people get to read it and to appreciate it. And I want to see this really successful. I'd love to see this in comic stores at some point. That would be a wonderful thing. See it in Diamond and be able to order it for their stores.
Yeah.
I really love that. But the hardcover to me was just blew me away. The quality was great. I just think that those things are great. So go to the website and order it, and look forward to, I'm going to get 4 and 5, so I'll keep up with the story. And it's just great stuff. And Manuel, I hope you have lots of success.
Thank you.
And just keep going and doing this wonderful stuff, because it's something we really need.
All right. Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Turn of the century, London is a city in transition. Cars compete with carriages, electricity has replaced the warm glow of gas lights, and science has finally triumphed over superstition and magic. But with the continent now on the brink of war, the world's most powerful artifacts have suddenly gone missing. The Monkey's Paw, the Hope Diamond, and the portrait of Dorian Gray. Such a supernatural arsenal could turn the tide of history. Only one man can stop them from falling into the wrong hands. Jack Wolverton, gentleman thief, specializing in the arcane, the accursed, and the occult.
It's great to be talking with Michael Stark, one of the creators of Wolverton, Thief of Impossible Objects. How are you doing today, Michael?
Cold, tired, and visually overwhelmed, so, but that is Dragon Con.
That's right. Many conventions are like that, which is really cool. So talk to me about Wolverton, Thief of Impossible Objects. My understanding is that this was a screenplay before it was a comic?
Right. We are screenwriters. We had a deal at a studio that will remain nameless, and it fell apart, as deals usually do. And as we were trying to ship it around to other producers, other studios, everyone said, well, this is a $150 million movie based on something we don't know. What if it was a comic book first? And they said, it has to be a comic book first. It has to be a comic book first. And we heard this for a year, and basically we said, how hard could it possibly be to make it a comic book and let this be a cautionary tale for... As, you know, again, if you asked me, how do I make an independent film, I could tell you everything and try and convince you not to do it. We had no background in comic books, and somehow we didn't screw it up. But revenge may not always be the best motivation. But the plus side is it's a rather nice comic book, and... for prosperity's sake, we have a finished product.
Which is great. Can I go back and tell them, here, I got the comic book?
Yeah, well, yeah, and now there's the vague interest again, so we'll see. Now they'll say, if it was only a graphic novel first.
Well, you'd have to collect them on our...
Right, yeah.
That's all you got to do. So, okay, why don't we talk about... Well, first of all, how the book came to be. Did you guys Kickstarter this? How did you make it?
We did Kickstart it. Well, actually, we had the first one almost finished. But we knew with Kickstarting is a way to get people to know about it, because nobody knew us. And so it helped us just go to the finish line to pay for the printing of the book. And... to start the word of mouth. So Kickstarter, Indiegogo is really good for, you know, just getting a fan base and then building our social media out of that. Because again, we're new to comic books. People did not know us. We did not know that, you know, we live in Atlanta, that Atlanta is a hub of comic book creators. And as I meet them now, it's like, why didn't you guys talk us out of this?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, comic books are springing up in different parts of the country. I live in Florida, and there's a huge comic book hub down there where indie comics come out of. And it's just, you know, you'd think it would all be in New York because many comic companies were up there, but no, it's spread out.
Well, I'm born and bred New Yorker, now living in Atlanta, and I don't think anyone could afford to live in New York anymore, so that might be why everybody is, you know, homesteading out.
Well, I'm interested because Wolverton seems to be based in London, or parts of England, and you know they go other places, of course, from there. But that's basically where it is. What was it as a New Yorker? What was it about London that attracted you to write a script about?
Well, we wanted to do it's a period piece in Edwardian England, and for people who don't know it, it's about a gentleman thief who specializes in stealing the accursed, the occultic, and magical items, but he really, really hates magic. So he's after the Hope Diamond, the Enchanted Monkey's Paw, the Portrait of Dorian Gray, and he's trying to keep this stuff out of the wrong hands. Yet he may find out that the Vatican who he's working for may be the wrong hands as well.
Mm.
So, spoiler alert.
All right, so who is Wolverton then?
He is, you know, kind of the trope of the gentleman thief. You know, very dashing, great with banter, very sophisticated, rich, seductive. He's pretty swashbuckling. He's Errol Flynn come to life.
See, James Bond came to mind when I was reading it.
Yeah,
I got that feeling.
It's a very pulpy throwback, and really how he came to being is I had written a gentleman thief script for Sean Connery, and it was before his Art Thief movie came out, and this is a long time ago. I'm dating myself. And the script, nothing ever happened with the script, and I wanted to revisit it, and I was pitching it to my writing partner. He's actually yawning. It's like, hey, gentleman thief, who cares, you know? How is he going to break into a modern day building that doesn't work today? He got me so angry. See how revenge is always my great motivation. And I said, what if we set in Edwardian England and he's going after the monkey's paw, he only steals magical stuff. And then he leaned in, and when someone leans in, you know you got them. And so we basically, after me really just trying to say, you know, that to him, so he made Italian hand gesture, it came alive and we started writing it. And, you know, as screenwriters, we did have management, and they set up a deal, which, again, fell apart.
Well, one of the things I really enjoy about the book is the fun aspect of it. You know, comics today, and you may not be familiar with all the comics, but a lot of them are kind of dark.
Right.
You know, Batman has gotten darker, and all these other people have gotten darker. This one actually has a lot of fun element to it, which I've kind of missed in comics, so I really enjoyed that.
Well, we tried to do that. We wanted to do a throwback to really old school, you know, in movie terms, they would say it's a tentpole franchise, four quadrant, you know, which means the whole family can go. So we tried to keep it like that. Again, it's like an Errol Flynn movie.
It's lots of fun. Are the accursed things, are these actual objects that are real that he's going after? Are they some of them created? Where'd they come from?
A lot are coming from literature, like the Monkey's Paw in issue one. Issue two is the Hope Diamond, which, you know, has a long history of being accursed and people dying, trying to steal it. We'll have the Portrait of Dorian Gray. We'll have other assorted objects. Some we've made up, some are from literature, some from mythology.
Okay, so how did you get the artist for this?
I'm kind of not allowed to say who our original artist was, but a good friend of mine is actually now the hottest graphic artist there is.
Really?
And she got so busy with her book, she couldn't do it.
Oh.
And again, we do not know people from the comic book crowd, and we just started looking on DeviantArt, looking for someone who had the kind of pulpy style. And we found Derek Roenbeck, who did issue one. After he finished, I guess because we were so pleasant to work with, he decided to go back to university. He was an Army vet, so he had... and is not really working in art anymore. So, we have to find someone for issue two. And Jackie was recommended by a lot of other artists and writers and publishers in Atlanta. And she's just, you know, she totally got what we were trying to do.
Very cool.
And she was a professor at SCAD, which is sort of the where everybody is learning comic book art from now.
Okay, wow. So you got issue one and issue two has just come out?
Yes.
How do you get Wolverton? Is it in stores or do you have to?
Yeah, that's the difficulty of being an indie comic book. And, you know, if you're in Atlanta, you could get it almost at any big comic book store in Atlanta, but outside it's difficult. Mm-hmm. So what we've been doing, if you go to our website, www.wolvertoncomicbook.com, mm-hmm. see, my voice for radio and face for television, or the other way around, we would do, if you buy issue two, we will throw in issue one for free to help you with the postage.
No, what's the plan? Are you going to make enough to make the collect into that graphic novel?
We hope so. It would probably take 5 issues to complete the arc.
Okay.
And again, you know, we live in Atlanta, which is sort of hillbilly Hollywood now with lots of film production.
Okay.
So we are always running into someone and handing them a Wolverton, and you can't hand a film script to anyone, but a comic book's like, oh, a free comic book, which you could read it, you know, in the bathroom. So,
which is good. So, are you going to Kickstarter each issue as you go along? Is that how it's going
to be? We'll have to, unless I rob a bank.
Okay. Okay. So I enjoy the cast of characters.
Oh, thank
you. I wanted to mention about that. I really like the female counterpart, shall we say, the actress in there. It's Isa, I think her name is.
Right.
She is like his opposite number on many levels, but just as strong as he is, you know, she's got a lot of wit when she talks, and there's lots of things to go on there from.
We do a lot of things, you know, I love old movies, so everything is a throwback, so there is a lot of screwball banter, you know, between Wolverton and his diva opera star girlfriend, and he kind of uses her to get into high society to different places. So,
so we got the Monkey's Paw and then the Hope Diamond. You have other objects in mind?
Yes, third issue, the big bad we've been developing is Dorian Gray, and who is the leader of the Golden Dawn, which is the occultic organization that has been collecting all these items to start World War I. And Wolverton, working for the Vatican, is trying to stop this. His father was a black cat too, so it's sort of the family business. And, so the third one probably would be the Portrait of Dorian Gray.
All right, so when's that going to come out? Do you have your
After I rob a bank. I think we'll be kickstarting within a few months.
Okay.
We'll see.
Okay, so if you mentioned the way to get it. Are you on, social media?
We are everywhere. Okay. Even though I'm technically Amish, we are on Twitter.
Okay.
We are on Facebook. We are on Instagram. And just look up Wolverton Thief of Impossible Objects, you will find us.
And also, I guess Kickstarter is a way, because you can look up the previous.
Right, you could see the previous, and after we had kickstarted, we did Indiegogo to, as we waited before. So,
is issue three, are you going to use the same art team as you did in two?
Pardon?
Are you going to use the same art team as on two and three?
We'll see.
Okay.
You never know. Things change.
Yes,
a comet may hit the Earth.
Yeah, life gets in the way of comets sometimes. It's a fun book. It's a great read. I enjoy that stuff. Like I said, we don't have as much fun as
we should.
So for me, I really like that. I would like to see this get on the big screen. Well, I think that would be great.
We're hoping. There is talk once again, but we'll see.
Okay, well, you know, much success with it. I hope that it all works well, and I hope we get to see more of Wolverton as time goes on.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
And that's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.